Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we want to talk on this program about an important journalistic interview that took place last Thursday or was broadcast last Thursday that the U.S. ruling class does not want you to listen to,
that's
does
for
not
sure.
want you to hear, does not want you to read. And
what
that, of course...
What interview? I didn't hear anything about an interview.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard about it before, but I sure didn't hear about it after.
Yes, yes. And of course, we're talking about Tucker Carlson's interview of Russian President Vladimir Putin, which you can watch at Tucker Carlson's website, tuckercarlson.com. You don't have to subscribe or anything. It's there for free for anyone who wants to watch it. You know, it was a little confusing to me because I thought it was going to be broadcast on X, you know, the former Twitter, but it actually... As far as I know, you need to go to the tuckercarlson.com website to actually see it. But in any event...
It was confusing. 5 o'clock. We're on Twitter. Or X. Oh, when's it going to start? When's it going to start? And it wasn't starting. What?
Right.
Maybe the NSA is blocking it. And then finally we figured it out.
Yeah. Now, of course, in the days prior to that, there was a national U.S. corporate media freakout about the entire thing. Yeah, international.
Well... Europe and America, sorry,
right,
not the Global South, of course.
The Western corporate media was just freaking out, and Carlson was called a traitor, even though the United States, hello, is not at war with Russia, and there's nothing uncommon about interviewing world leaders, including Vladimir Putin himself. American journalists have interviewed Osama bin Laden and all kinds of people, and they're not considered traitors, but now all of a sudden... There was just hysteria over it, frankly. And I know, Paula, you talked about it a little bit on your last Occupy program.
I did.
Glenn Greenwald did a great job of talking about that.
Well, what they're trying to do is it's just another step in their goal of making it so we proles don't hear anything that is not approved by our overlords.
Yeah.
And this is just another step. Before it was like, don't get on social media and talk to a bunch of people that just are just crazy people on the internet. And
right.
Now it's like, don't listen to the president of Russia and one of the most watched journalists in America.
Yeah, right,
like,
yeah.
No, they're really going far now. The only thing you can listen to is the brain dead president that we have, which is kind of interesting because they're finally admitting he's brain dead after all these years. It's kind of amazing that is the narrative they have chosen to push.
Some of them. I mean, there's pushback against that as well.
Well, maybe that's it. We're supposed to argue about whether President Biden is really brain dead or if he just has a stutter. That's what we're supposed to argue about instead of talking about the Tucker Carlson-Putin interview.
Right.
I don't think it's working that well. It's working kind of, but not that well, because really, come on now.
Yeah.
This is not a question to argue about.
Yeah. So anyway, first they freaked out and called him a traitor and suggested you don't watch it. Then after it happened, then it became mostly a non-event. The few corporate media outlets that did talk about it said, oh, it was a softball interview and... He let Putin get away with stuff and blah, blah, blah. Well, we think that it's a good idea to maybe actually listen to what Putin has to say, and then you make up your own mind about what you think about it.
Make up your own mind?
Right.
Is that like doing your own research? Mm. That is no longer allowed, dude.
Yeah, that's right. And why should you do that? Well, I can think of 47 billion reasons why, at least. $47 billion being the amount in U.S. so-called security assistance alone to Ukraine since 2014. And of course, they want to send billions and billions more. And that's not even taking account the economic aid, so-called, that's gone there, etc. So yeah, billions and billions of taxpayer dollars being sent to Ukraine are maybe one reason why you might want to get another point of view on this.
I think it's $61 billion, not $47 billion, that they're talking about sending to Ukraine. That they're asking for right now.
Right now, yeah.
And that's on top of, I don't think it's been $47 billion. I think it's been over $200 billion. You know, Victoria Nuland bragged in 2013 that the United States had already spent $5 billion trying to overthrow the elected governments of Ukraine. which they finally managed to do in 2014. And we are coming up to the 10th anniversary of the coup.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the 47 I got from Congressional Research Service, and that was strictly Department of Defense. So there's probably a lot more money that's been sent under other categories.
Victoria Nuland is in the State Department. I'm sure that $5 billion came from the State Department and not the Department of Defense.
Right, right, yeah. So it's been more, whether it's 47 or 61 billion reasons, you've got plenty of reasons
pretty soon
to want to get maybe you're the other side and then make up your own mind.
Pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So we want to share with you some of the highlights of the interview itself. And again, you can listen to the whole thing yourself at tuckercarlson.com. There's also a transcript that's provided by the second smartest guy in the world, his website. I'm sure there's other transcripts floating around, although there was also a false transcript that was circulated on social media
a couple days before.
Yeah.
You know darn well it was put out by the national intelligence agencies because it was viral. I saw it everywhere I went. And that doesn't happen unless there is the deep state behind it. You just don't see that happen, especially that fast.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, boom, it's everywhere.
Right.
Come on now.
So with that, let's turn to the real thing. And the beginning, and Tucker Carlson later said he was kind of shocked by this. What was kind of remarkable about the first half hour or so is that Putin launches into a history lesson about Ukraine.
Like he was a professor.
Yeah, exactly. Going all the way back to the year 862. So it is pretty interesting. And
yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, if you're interested in history and if you have more than the attention span of a goldfish,
right.
Which I know I saw a study that said the average American has less of attention span than the average goldfish. So there you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, remember I showed you even the Russians made fun of it because what Putin said was, give me a minute. Or 30 seconds or a minute, and I just want to talk a little bit about the history. And then he talks for half an hour. So remember, so the Russians made fun of his like, da, 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 the Star Wars beginning and where they roll out the history, you know.
Of what happened.
Yeah, the Star Wars part 3, and then they go through the whole history of the other parts.
From a galaxy far, far away. Right.
And so it was really kind of funny. It was all in Russian, but you could still get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the gist of that history lesson, which is fascinating in and of itself, is that Eastern Ukraine and actually a good part of Western Ukraine has historically been Russian. It had come under the authority of other countries like Poland and Lithuania, etc.
Well, the Polish-Lithuanian Empire. Borders changed all the time.
Exactly.
But the people that lived there were still Russian, spoke Russian. It wasn't like America where they came in and just wiped out the people before.
Right.
The people stayed there. They were Russians. They spoke Russians. Just sometimes they were Ukrainian and sometimes they were Russian and sometimes they were Polish and, you know.
Right, right.
He did point out that some of the people in Ukraine are actually Hungarians.
Yeah, ethnic Hungarian.
And some are Romanians, you know. So, yeah, the borders got changed all the time. People, you know, American media pretends like, oh, no. Borders never change. I mean, you can look at the history of America. Oh, I'm sorry, people can't look at history. It takes too long. But I mean, we went from 13 colonies on the East Coast in 1800 to the entire continent, except for Mexico and Canada, in 1900. And by the way, the United States invaded Canada in 1812 and did fight with Mexico and take half of Mexico.
Right.
In 18, what was it, 48?
Yeah.
Something, yeah. So the borders of America changed big time from 1800 and 1900, but no one cares about that. Russia is expansionist. Really?
Yeah.
Most of what Russia actually has now, they're the biggest country in the world. It's because when the Mongol Empire collapsed, you know, when they fought off the Mongol Empire after a couple centuries, he left that out in his history. They just inherited all that land. The Mongols went all the way down to Iran and all the way over to Poland.
Yeah, yeah.
And they took over China too.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, I digress. Go ahead.
It is fascinating, but that's really his main point is we're talking about an area that has been largely ethnically Russian or at least Russian language speaking, common religion, you know, common culture, except for some of the enclaves that were Polish or were Lithuanian or were Hungarian that were kind of incorporated into it.
But as he pointed out, Eastern Ukraine, what they call Eastern Ukraine, the Donbass, was always Russian.
Yeah.
Always Russian. Yeah. It was never under the Poles or the Lithuanians or the Germans. They were always Russia, and so was Odessa.
Right.
Odessa was always Russia, too.
Yeah.
And it was never under any of the other stuff. Why is it in Ukraine? Psh,
right.
Stalin.
No, well,
it was Lenin. It was Lenin. Yeah, he blamed Lenin.
Right. Lenin did create something approaching modern Ukraine. And then, of course, Khrushchev gave Crimea to Ukraine.
Just out of the blue. Well, it wasn't Lenin. It was the early Soviets.
Right. Yeah.
They did this as a cooperative thing. It wasn't Lenin. You know, it was the people that had been brainwashed by the Poles. You know, say, no, you're not Russian, you're Ukrainian. And some of them believed it, and they became nationalists. That's where the OUN started. And so they cooperated after the revolution. They're like, okay, you want to be part of the Soviet Union? Okay, you can be Ukraine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here's some of Russia, so you'll be a big country, you know, a big Soviet. Yeah.
So anyway, skipping down, and we would encourage you to listen or to read that. But regardless of that, then he gets to a point where he talks about the disintegration of the USSR.
That's where the problem started.
Yeah. And Putin says, after all, the collapse of the Soviet Union was effectively initiated by the Russian leadership. I do not understand what the Russian leadership was guided by at the time, but I suspect there were several reasons to think everything would be fine.
I know what they were guided by. The United States went in and bribed them.
Well, that was a good part of it, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They just paid them off the way they always do to these leaders and stuff.
Right, and many of the leading bureaucrats of the time
including Putin,
enticed by the idea of becoming owners of industries, etc., and going capitalist. In any event, he says, first, I think that then Russian leadership believed that the fundamentals of the relationship between Russia and Ukraine were in fact a common language. More than 90% of the population there spoke Russian, there were family ties, every third person there had some kind of family or friendship ties. Common culture, common history, common faith, coexistence with a single state for centuries. And he says, all these elements together make our good relationships inevitable. Then he said, the second point is a very important one. I want you as an American citizen and your viewers to hear about this. The former Russian leadership assumed that the Soviet Union had ceased to exist, and therefore there were no longer any ideological dividing lines. Russia even agreed voluntarily and proactively to the collapse of the Soviet Union and believed that this would be understood by the so-called civilized West as an invitation for cooperation and association. That is what Russia was expecting.
Yeah, that's what the people bribing them said. And it was the leader of Russia, Yeltsin, the leader of Ukraine, and the leader of Belarus, those two guys, I cannot remember their name, but the Soviet Union didn't collapse. It was destroyed by those three men.
Right, yeah.
They had done a referendum in the Soviet Union asking the citizens, do you want to break up the Soviet Union? And overwhelmingly, well over, depending on the country, right, they all said, no, we want to keep the Soviet Union. So these three guys, the leaders of Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine, went off to a forest dacha in secret, and they signed the dissolution of the Soviet Union, just the three of them.
Yeah.
Because they were told they were going to get rich, and they were going to be, they're going to be part of the West, and they were going to have all the flashy cars and the jeans and all that stuff that the West had. That's what they were told. And they could get filthy rich, and a lot of them did.
Yeah.
But, they betrayed millions and millions of people. Just in Russia, died during the 90s after their country was destroyed.
Yeah, yeah. So a little later on in the interview, Putin says, let's get into the fact that after 1991, when Russia expected that it would be welcomed into the brotherly family of civilized nations, nothing like this happened.
Civilized nations. He means capitalists. But capitalists are thieves. They fight among themselves all the time. Everyone knows that.
Yeah,
or everyone should know that.
Should know that, but that's not what they expected at the time.
Well,
he said, he said, you tricked us, and he says to Tucker, I don't mean you personally. I'm talking about the United States. The promise was that NATO would not expand eastward, but it happened five times. There were five waves of expansion. We tolerated all that. We were trying to persuade them. We were saying, please don't. We're as bourgeois now as you are. We're in a market economy and there is no Communist Party power. Let's negotiate.
Oh, as it turns out, it wasn't communism that upset the United States. They just wanted that land and those resources.
Yeah.
It's been 33 years. How obvious should it be to everyone by now? It was never communism. It was always, we want that gold.
Land.
We want that oil. We want that land. We want that timber. We want that uranium.
Yep.
Russia is awash in resources and the United States wants it.
The United States ruling class wants it. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So then he talks about how Yeltsin came to the United States and said, God bless America, and everything seemed fine at first. But then the conflict in Yugoslavia happened, and he talks about this. This is the first betrayal, I think, when Yeltsin raised his voice in support of the Serbs. And we couldn't but raise our voices for Serbs in their defense, says Putin. I understand that there were complex processes underway there. I do, but Russia could not help raising its voice in support of Serbs because Serbs are also a special and close to us nation with Orthodox culture and so on. It's a nation that has suffered so much for generations. Well, regardless, what is important is that Yeltsin expressed his support, and what did the United States do? In violation of international law and the UN Charter, it started bombing Belgrade. It was the United States that let the genie out of the bottle. And he's right about that. You know, the United States, with NATO, started bombing those sections of Yugoslavia that were resisting the breakup of Yugoslavia.
It started before that. You can read Robert Baer, B-A-E-R, who was a CIA agent, who wrote a thing saying the CIA gave us millions to break up Yugoslavia. And he's talking about from 1991.
Right.
He said they were sent in there, but they weren't exactly told what the plan was. You know, that was higher up people that decided to break up Yugoslavia. But they started in 1991. They went in there and they started ethnic hostilities.
Right.
This is how they do it. This is how they did it in Ukraine. This is how they did it in Yugoslavia. This is how they did it in Iraq, Sunnis versus Shiites.
Right.
Under Saddam Hussein, they all were in the same government, right?
Right.
But then the United States goes in there and starts blowing up mosques and death squads for Shiites and boom.
Yeah.
You know? And they did the same thing in Yugoslavia. And you know this all started before 1999 because they set up that special kangaroo court for Yugoslavia. It was called the ICTW, the International Court for the Former Yugoslavia, or something like that. It was set up in 1994, somewhere around there. There wasn't any war crimes before that, right? This is something they set up before they started publicizing, oh, the Serbians are committing genocide, blah, blah, blah. They always do that. And they'd set up the criminal court before. And then after they murdered Milosevic, and then they got a couple other ones, the whole thing dissolved. There's no longer an ICTY.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They set it up specifically to destroy Yugoslavia. And when it was done, they disbanded. And now Yugoslavia is destroyed.
And as Putin points out, this was all done in violation of the UN Charter and international law. The United States and the NATO powers declared international law obsolete, in his view. That was the beginning of the so-called rules-based order, et cetera, kind of stuff.
I think he said that they actually told him that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that international law doesn't apply to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, yeah, that's when they started the rules-based order. Also, that's when they started their responsibility to protect. That's part of the rules-based order. Because international law says you can't just go in and destroy another country. But the United States says, well, you can if you say that they're killing their own people.
Right.
Right? And only the United States can. No one else can.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Which is kind of bizarre because I keep pointing out the Kiev regime, after the coup of 2014, started killing its own people.
Yeah.
And the United States just sent them more and more weapons and advisors and mercenaries, you know. And then they impeached Trump because they said he held up weapons to Ukraine so that they could kill their own people. They left that part out. But what hypocrites.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And that, of course, was the war on the people of the Donbas region, etc. But in any event, throughout the course of the interview, Putin gives several examples of how the U.S. national security state, the deep state or whatever, he doesn't use that term, but pointing out how they're really in charge, because he gives an example about how he met with Bill Clinton once and said, well, what do you think about Russia joining NATO? And Bill Clinton's initial response was, well, it's an interesting idea. But in the evening when we met him for dinner, he said, you know, I've talked to my team. No, it's not possible now. And
obviously he's being controlled. Well, the same thing happens with Biden. Biden will say something And then they'll come out later and they'll say the White House clarified that Biden misspoke.
Yeah.
What do you mean the White House? What does that mean, the White House? Who's the White House? Isn't Biden in charge of his team? No.
Right, right.
It always cracks me up when they do that. The White House issued a clarification that Biden was once again talking through his hat.
So he gives other examples how Russia was trying to build good relations with the United States in the Middle East, in Iraq, and elsewhere. After Putin himself became president of Russia, and he said, I repeatedly raised the issue, the United States should not support separatism or terrorism in the North Caucasus, but they continue to do it anyway. And he describes an incident there where at first he got a response, that's going on, no, we'll put a stop to that. Yet there was no response. There was no reply after they promised to do something to stop the support for terrorism. So Putin says to the FSB director, that's the Russian equivalent of the CIA, write to the CIA. What is the result of the conversation with the president? He wrote once, twice, then he got a reply. We have the answer in the archive. The CIA replied, we have been working with the opposition in Russia. We believe that this is the right thing to do, and we'll keep on doing it. So that's the answer he got.
Yeah.
You know, just brazen, we're going to continue to support terrorists within
that
your territories.
That was in Chechnya at the time. Yeah. They were supporting terrorists. They deny it now. What they say is Putin went and attacked these people for no good reason, right?
Right.
But they also do it in Armenia and Tajikistan and what is it, Kazakhstan?
Kazakhstan.
Remember that color revolution a couple years ago? They're doing it all over the place.
Yeah.
What he does, he refers to the deep state as the CIA. But of course, there's way more than the CIA involved there. But I guess the CIA is the flagship. I don't know.
Yeah, they certainly play a central role, but yeah. In any event. He talks about the time when the ABM treaty was dissolved, and remember the U.S. was saying, well, we need to build, you know, anti-ballistic missile systems to protect us from Iran.
We're going to put them in Poland.
Yeah,
We're going to put anti-Iranian missiles in Poland.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of bull they put out, and they expect people to believe it. And the thing is, the mighty bullets are all the talking heads do. Well, the United States needs to put defense against Iran and Poland so that Iran doesn't attack Poland. As if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As if anyone with two brain cells couldn't see that was a bunch of bull, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And yet they do it anyhow.
So he describes meeting with the Bush administration, including Bush Sr., who was still involved in the Bush Jr.'s administration at the time, talking about it, they had efforts to try to negotiate an agreement. He said, well, look, if you want to have a missile defense system, why don't we work together on one? Russia, the United States, and Europe, and they said that was an interesting idea. And once again, at first they sounded receptive, and then he said, then Secretary of Defense Gates, former director of CIA, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice came in here in this cabinet, right here at this table, me, the foreign minister, the Russian defense minister on our side, they said to me, yes, we have thought about it. And I said, thank God, great. But then they said, but with some exceptions, and basically tanking the whole deal.
Right. They got told. I guess Bush wasn't the decider. Remember when he said, I'm the decider. Yeah, you're not. Just like Biden isn't.
Yeah, yeah. And so he points out as a result of that, you know, the ABM treaty fell by the wayside. And now, well, they say they went their own way and they created hypersonic systems with intercontinental range to be able to overcome the anti-ballistic missile defenses. And Russia, as he pointed out, is now ahead of the United States and other countries in these hypersonic strike systems, which is true. And it's because the United States didn't give Russia any other choice, you know?
Yeah, well, the thing is, their intermediate missile ban that they did in the 80s, remember when we even marched in that anti-nuke thing, we thought
right.
It was a big thing. So they signed a thing, all right, we won't build intermediate defense missiles, and now they're having trouble in Ukraine because that's where they need them, but they had abided by the treaty, which
right.
only expired a few years ago under Trump, so they don't have them.
Yeah.
So they're having to build them. And I think they got some from North Korea, which everyone's screaming about, but hey, North Korea wasn't part of that treaty. And you know darn well that the United States didn't pay any attention to that treaty. You know they still built intermediate missiles.
Yeah, well, in any event, it's gone by the wayside now.
Yeah.
And then he again talks about the NATO expansion and how offensive that was, you know, because they were promised back in 1990 or 91 that no, NATO would not expand an inch to the east, we were told.
Yep.
And instead it expanded. And then he talked about how in 2008 they started talking about Ukraine joining NATO the first time, and then they backed down a little bit, and then they, you know, and so on. And he talks about the earlier 2004 coup in Ukraine. Now, we've talked about the 2014 coup, and he gets to that. But he points out that even before that, the U.S. was supporting an opposition candidate that was more pro-Western and presumably more interested in Ukraine joining the European Union and NATO. And said after President Kuchma, Viktor Yanukovych won the elections in 2004. However, his opponents did not recognize that victory. The U.S. supported the opposition, and a third round was scheduled.
Well, that was called the Orange Revolution. If anyone wants to know, they can look it up. The United States calls that the Orange Revolution. What they did was they paid people to sit in the Maidan, same as they did in 2014. The only difference between 2004 and 2014 is that that was a nonviolent coup.
Yeah.
You know, that one, it did not involve snipers killing people in the Maidan.
Yeah.
It just involved holding another election, which, oh my goodness, look at that. The other guy won. What a shock. And then he promptly, you know, turned a whole bunch of land over to U.S. agribusiness and started letting Americans invest in Ukrainian, for instance, natural gas companies, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So he described it as a coup. The U.S. supported it, and the winner of the third round came to power. Imagine if in the U.S. something was not to someone's liking and a third round of election, which the U.S. Constitution does not provide for, was organized. Nonetheless, it was done in Ukraine. So Viktor Yushchenko, who is considered the pro-Western politician, came to power after that. He said, fine, we built relations with him as well. He came to Moscow. We visited Kiev. They still tried to make it work. However, things got worse. And then Viktor Yanukovych, who was originally elected in 2004, came back to power. And Putin says maybe he wasn't the best president and politician. I don't know. I don't want to give assessments. However, the issue of the association with the EU came up. We've always been lenient into this. Suit yourself. But when we read through the Treaty of Association, it turned out to be a problem for us since we had a free trade zone and open customs borders with Ukraine, which under this association had to open its borders for all of Europe, which would have led to flooding of our market. So we said, no, this is not going to work. We would have to close our borders with Ukraine, that is the customs borders. Yanukovych started to calculate how much Ukraine was going to gain, how much to lose, and said to his European partners, I think we need more time to think before signing. The moment he said that, the opposition began to take destructive steps, which were supported by the West. It all came down to Maidan and a coup in Ukraine, and then he starts talking about the 2014
coup. Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was really a bad one.
Yeah, so, you know, he talked about how during that, in the prelude to that, they were misled again. The U.S. told us, calm Yanukovych down and we will calm the opposition. Let the situation unfold. We said, all right, we agreed, let's do it this way. As the Americans requested, Yanukovych did use neither the armed forces nor the police, yet the armed opposition committed a coup in Kiev. What is that supposed to mean? Who do you think you are? I wanted to ask the then U.S. leadership. And he said it was with the backing of the CIA, and of course it was, and he talked about how they spent $5 billion, U.S. taxpayer money was spent $5 billion to basically foment this coup in 2014. Well, there's a lot more to this interview. Maybe we'll do a part two. We'll have to figure that out. But in any event, that gives you a little bit of the flavor of why this is so important. And incidentally, one thing that Putin does talk about for sure is fear-mongering with, you know, that we hear that, oh, you know, if he's allowed to get away with invading Ukraine, then he's going to invade Poland and all of Europe, etc. And Putin basically puts to rest that notion that that's just absolutely ridiculous. They have no interest in doing that whatsoever. Anyway, there is a lot more, and maybe we'll get back to it. You can find the full interview at tuckercarlson.com. But that's all the time we have. Thank you for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.